You saw him at the Oscars. Now on today's show, we have longtime gay rights activist Cleve Jones talking about what it was like to walk the red carpet at the Academy Awards, dance with Madonna at the after party, and hold Dustin Lance Black's hand during the momentous evening.
The Oscar win for the film Milk certainly gives the national gay rights movement a shot in the arm, but can we leverage the movie's success into a comprehensive bill that ensures equality for all Americans?
Listen as we also discuss the fishy biological origins of sex.
Going green by legalizing same-sex marriage.
Simon Cowell prefers to be icy in life, not death.
The world's most unfortunate names.
The world's most windowed office building.
And using magnets to confuse crocodiles.
If you got a moment, please vote for Feast of Fools in the ChicagoReader.com Best of Chicago Awards. We're hoping to win the Best Gay News Source Award. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fools. Feast of Fools is brought to you by generous support of fantastic people like you.
We really can't do this show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffools.net, and make a donation, buy a t-shirt.
Your contributions make the site and this podcast possible.
Thank you.
Hello.
Is this Cleve Jones?
It is.
You call me homo-loving son of a gun. How are you? It's Fausto.
And Mark, how are you, Cleve?
I'm good. Hi, boys. How are you doing?
Good. Have you recovered from your Oscar hangover?
Oh, no. That'll take a year or two, I would imagine.
An entire lifetime. So if you're supposed to drink a lot of water for a regular hangover, what are you supposed to do for an Oscar hangover?
Well, the cure this time seems to be the constant phone calls from the Midwest.
That would be us.
Who could that be?
That would be you, yeah.
No, I have to tell you what a thrill it was to actually watch somebody as fabulous as you, and actually somebody that I personally know, sitting there at the Oscars watching history unfold in a way.
Well, I think it was historic, and you know, I don't want to make too much about the impact of pop culture on political movements, but I think in this case it was profoundly important. And you know, on two levels, I think, you know, the lesser impact is on the political process, but clearly it's a shot in the arm for the movement. But I was so proud of Dustin Lance Black and Sean, because of all of the queer kids in the closet all over the world who got to hear that message. Now, we're learning today they didn't get to hear it in China or India. Thank you, Rupert Murdoch.
Was that his decision?
Apparently, that's what I hear, at least. But all across this country and most of the rest of the world, young kids struggling with their sexual orientation. And
don't you think the message still came across, even though the words were censored?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I have no ability to know how it was presented, but I think that now there's quite an uproar about it, so the message will get through. I was just so pleased with both of them that there was not one word of either speech that I would have edited in any way. I think they were amazing. And that Lance, you know, he is just a really remarkable young man.
You certainly had the hottest date at the Oscars, I have to say.
Well, no doubt, I'm Cleve Jones.
And he had the hottest, too.
I know, you guys made that such a cute little sort of like intergenerational couple.
What did you guys wear? What were you wearing?
Yeah.
He was wearing an extraordinarily expensive Tom Ford tuxedo. I was wearing an extraordinarily cheap Calvin Klein off-the-rack tuxedo, but I thought they looked identical.
I know. I was thinking the same thing, too. I said, I bet Cleve has the, like, normal tux.
Yeah.
And then Dustin, DLB, as we now call him, has the $4 million tuxedo. Did you have any diamonds from Harry Winston or anything?
Not quite. No, I'm a simple man. I work for a labor union. I can't afford Tom Ford suits.
What was the day like? You woke up at what time in the morning? Like, did you do any like Pilates or had a special Oscars breakfast that day?
The whole week was essentially back-to-back parties. It started, I guess, Wednesday night, Josh Brolin hosted a party at Chateau Marmont, and we went to that, and then there were brunches and lunches and dinners, and there was the Independent Spirit Awards on Saturday, where Lance also won and James Franco won. And, you know, it was quite cool. They picked me up at the hotel and sent me over there, and we were so nervous because it looked like, you know, Slumdog was going to really shut out everything, mm-hmm. and we were really apprehensive about that, and I thought the two that we had the best shot at were the ones that we won. I was so disappointed that Gus didn't get it, that we didn't get Best Picture, but I think given the overwhelming response to Slumdog Millionaire, we were incredibly lucky.
Don't discount the overwhelming response, positive response to Milk. Could we be seeing a film, and I'm kind of joking when we say, like, gay orphans from Mumbai, but will there be a film that combines all these topics together? Because there's a public demand and a appetite for these types of films, will we be seeing these type of issues being married together in films in the future?
Well, you know, I don't think there was any deliberate strategy to marry them together. I think it really is just coincidence. And I think the bigger part of it was the mood of the country. You know, it's people are depressed. They should be. We're in a depression. And they wanted that kind of feel-good, happy end, bells and whistles movie. So, you know, I don't want to read too much into it, but we do need to talk about the after party hosted by Madonna, however.
Madonna hosts an after party?
Oh, yes.
Finally, Cleve, at age 54, got to dance with Madonna.
Wow.
So that was the pinnacle of my career.
Well,
I can die happy now.
You busted some moves with Madonna?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of dance did you do?
I was dancing with Madonna, I would be voguing. What did you do?
I just attempted to shuffle around on my, you know, walker there, but it was a very odd sensation to be in a room full of people, and the only face I did not recognize was my own.
And did Dustin DLB dance with Madge?
I thought one of the funniest moments was when the DJ of the party, who's someone named what is his name, P. Diddy or Puff Daddy or mm-hmm. something like that, kept shouting into the microphone, "Dustin Lance Black in the house, Oscar winner." And and then he was holding up Penelope Cruz's statuette and Lance's statuette, and I think they actually got mixed up. And by the way, Penelope Cruz is amazing and has the most beautiful brother.
Really?
Ooh.
So is he a little, you know, tingling?
He's I don't know what his story is, but my God, he's gorgeous.
And Madonna's boyfriend, Jesus, a boyfriend or adopted child? I don't know if she adopted him or if she's...
That's what Sean Penn allegedly said to her after Madonna went to congratulate him, and he said, "Oh, thanks, you adopted another kid?"
At this point, I'm going to maintain a discreet silence.
Well, I just thought, you know, that was sort of like awkward and weird. But and also, there's rumors going around that I mean, this took place at the Oscars after party. But people are also saying that Sean Penn didn't go to the party. So what really happened?
Sean went to the Governor's Ball. He went to the Vanity Fair party. And he went to the after party that was hosted by Madonna and Demi Moore. And he had a great time.
So there was a lot of parties happening. It's not like he purposefully avoided a certain party associated with a film.
No, of course not.
But why are people like trying to build this up? Like Sean Penn dissed Cleve Jones and Dustin Lance Black after that. I was like, what? Why are we seeing this stupid drama?
Well, it's just silliness. We were all on cloud nine. It was a wonderful, wonderful night, and everyone was so happy. And I was so proud of Sean's speech, and I don't know where these rumors come from, but everyone was having a wonderful time, and there was no dissing or any nonsense at all.
So where in the Oscars were you actually sitting watching the events unfold?
Right down in front with Lance.
Did you guys hold hands when you got nervous?
I kept clutching his knee.
Oh, I would have been clutching a lot more than just his knee. Let me tell you. The moment before they announced Dustin Lance Black as the winner for the screenplay, and that was the first time that Milk was up for the award, what went through your mind? Because I was looking, I was trying to analyze when the camera caught to your face.
I wanted that so badly for him. I love Lance. He's such a good person. He's a brilliant writer and did far more than write that movie. He shepherded it through the process. He fought like hell to keep the politics in it. He fought like hell to keep it real. He's a remarkable young man and is so eager to be useful to the movement. And he's just completely genuine. The Lance that you see giving interviews, you know, that is the real person. And I wanted it so badly for him and was, you know, I'm not a religious person at all, but I became religious. those moments as we waited, I was praying to Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad and Kali, and it was spectacular. And, you know, it's fun to joke and dish about it all, but it was important. It was important for our movement. And what is making me so happy now is that because Lance won this, he's been given this opportunity to speak for us. And he does so with such eloquence and such dignity and such a clear political perspective. So he and I are heading up to San Francisco for the opening arguments for the Supreme Court deliberations on Proposition 8, and we're going to be doing everything we can to prepare this new emerging generation of leadership for the struggle ahead. And, you know, from our perspective, this is not going to be won without a big struggle. And we want to encourage everyone now to begin thinking very clearly and studying the history of nonviolent civil disobedience and understanding that it's not enough to march, it's not enough to go to black tie dinners or dance parties to raise money, it's certainly not enough to click a mouse. People are going to have to get out in the street. And, you know, one thing that's going to be coming up right as we head into the Pride season and the 40th anniversary of Stonewall, this Supreme Court, the California Supreme Court, will rule on Proposition 8. That ruling will come down within 90 days of March 1st. So at the end of May, probably, or beginning of June, we're going to have a ruling. And our position is that whatever that ruling is, whether they let Prop 8 stand or whether they knock it out or whether there's a split decision and they allow the 18,000 or so marriages that were performed during that time to remain but not allow any more, the response from our community must be the same. We must take our joy at the ruling or our anger at the ruling, whatever it is, and get out in the streets all across the country and understand that true equality does not come with the overturning of Prop 8. Even if we win, we are still second-class citizens in California. We are still denied the most basic civil rights that accrue to heterosexuals through marriage. Those rights will only come when the Congress and President Obama sign a comprehensive federal bill into law, and that must be our goal.
Is this what Dustin was talking about when he was doing his speech about passing a comprehensive bill at the federal level? Is this where we ultimately are headed?
Absolutely. This strategy of fighting state by state, county by county, city by city is a failed strategy. It's what we've been doing for the last 40 years. It wasn't our choice. It wasn't our decision. It was imposed upon us, but it has not worked, and it's time to abandon that strategy and focus on Congress and the president and understand that with this president and this Congress, we have an historic window of opportunity. And if we do not seize this moment, We are very, very foolish.
And your point was that the last time you were on the show was saying that some states, there's just no way they're going to give equality. They, just like they wouldn't give equality to African Americans, you know, during the 60s. Mississippi would have never done anything. And it's only at a national level that you can do something like this.
Yeah, you know, I think there's plenty of states right now that would prefer not to extend equal protection of the law to African Americans. And, you know, this is part of, we need to unify our movement. And we exist in every city, town, and village in this entire country. And with all of this focus on gaining a fraction of equality in California, I think we're really doing a disservice to our brothers and sisters in Arkansas and Alabama and North Dakota and Illinois and Michigan and everywhere else where we still don't have equality. So let's join together. Let's say this isn't about California. It isn't just about marriage equality. It's about all of us in the entire country and all of our rights. That's the message that Lance and I are putting out with every ounce of our strength right now.
So take it to the national level. Now, let me ask you this, because recently former President Clinton crossed the picket line at the Manchester Hyatt in San Diego, and you're an advocate for picketing the hotel because they gave a lot of money to support passing Proposition 8. So do you have any words for former President Bill Clinton?
Because he probably listens to the show. Or at least his gay friends do.
Shame on you, Bill Clinton. The boycott of Chester Grand Hyatt Hotel was called because the owner of that hotel, which is the second largest Hyatt property in the country, gave $125,000 to put Prop 8 on the ballot. The boycott is endorsed by the California Federation of Labor and by the LGBT community of San Diego. So we have this important coalition of labor in the gay community boycotting this hotel. Bill Clinton knew it. And he chose to go there. He ignored our rally. He went there to be paid to give a speech to the Franchise Association, which is a largely Republican business group. So I thought it was an outrageous betrayal of our community and the Democratic Party.
Why do you think he did it, though? I mean, why did he do it?
I would assume, I mean, I have no inside information here, but I would assume he did it for the money. And I was very disappointed, but I was not surprised. And, you know, as we go forward and build pressure on President Obama, you know, one of the things we're going to hear and that we're already hearing from Obama people is that you can't expect movement on our issues when our new president faces a failing economy and two wars. Well, I want to remind people that under Bill Clinton, we had 8 years of relative peace and prosperity. And what did we get from that man who told us he had a vision of America that included us? Well, you know what we got. We got Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the Defensive Marriage Act.
What are your thoughts on President Obama's speech on Tuesday? I know it's sort of been overshadowed by the for us, for all gay people, we're like, Oscars, milk, and
we all have
Let's
Oscar
Black.
Fever.
We all have Oscar fever, but it's like, there's, you know, we're also in the middle of a recession, some people would argue, well, let's put our personal rights aside right now in interest of the nation as a whole and the economy. What would you say to that?
Well, I reject that argument. I thought Obama's speech was very good. Clearly, he was studying FDR and the fireside chats during the Depression. I think he really struck the right tone of optimism and hope. But, I care deeply about my community and our rights and our movement, but I am an American, and I know that my country is in deep trouble. The planet is in grave peril. I know that there are issues out there that are far more far-reaching and important than those of our specific community. We want to be part of the solution. We helped elect Barack Obama. He is our president. This is our country. It is our Constitution. It is our Bill of Rights. I think that queer America wants to help, wants to be there, but we want to be there as equal partners. And there's a line from a poem by the great a gay poet, Allen Ginsberg, that just keeps coming back to my mind over and over, and that is from his poem, America. He says, I'm putting my queer shoulder to the wheel, America. So You know, that's what we all want to be part of the solution. We all want to be part of saving our country and restoring democracy and saving the planet, and we wish to do that as equal partners.
But isn't fighting for justice and equality help the economy, help to stabilize your country, actually improves it? Like, why are we being forced to choose one versus the other?
Why not both?
You know? It's a false choice, and we have to reject it.
Mm-hmm.
The country requires us to come together and to cross these boundaries and face the incredible challenges together. And that's what we're saying, and that's what we're going to do.
We've got some questions from our listeners through Facebook or through AOL Instant Messenger, Feast of Fools, the number 4, the letter U. This one comes from David St. Michael. Cleve, what are some of the biggest obstacles right now standing in the way of full rights for gays in this country?
Well, I go back to Harvey Milk. You know, the single most important thing that we must all do as individuals is to come out of the closet and reveal ourselves to our families and neighbors and coworkers and let people understand who we are. So I think the greatest obstacle remains the fear that individual queer people have about coming out. I think, you know, the second step is to finally demand that straight people really get with the program and show their support. You know, I'm eager to see more from straight people. I think Sean's speech was very helpful in that regard.
They need to be gay for equality.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, just this idea that too long we've accepted compromise. We've accepted fractions of equality, and we've allowed, frankly, we have allowed our own leaders to sell us out. You know, I am so, I mean, this was what Clinton did, was he dangled the possibility of appointments for some of our more powerful and well-known leaders. And so, you know, some of my friends got good jobs in the Clinton administration, but did our community actually move forward in terms of gaining rights? No, we did not. So we need to really hold our leadership accountable. And equally our straight allies.
Cleve, during the Oscars, because Sean mentioned the anti-gay protesters and stuff, I didn't really see much coverage of that on the news. Did you actually see them when you came in?
Yes, it was the lovely Phelps clan.
It was Shirley Phelps. Shout out to you, Shirley. It's almost like she's almost like a professional, like, ridiculing homophobia in a way. You know, it's almost like she's too good to be true. How ridiculous she is. And I thought that was kind of weird that the fact that the news media didn't cover the protesters. Like, you didn't see it, a lot of it, on CNN or E or the traditional coverage of the...
You really didn't. I think, it really shows the face of bigotry and hatred. And I think Shirley is very happy to show her face with that and let you know that God hates facts.
And I appreciate her bringing her crazy to the movement of hatred. You know what I'm saying? Okay.
Was, check out fagsforphelps.com.
Fagsforphelps.com. So Nick in the UK wants to know if he can have James Franco's phone number. Pretty much like everybody, you know, all the men associated with this movie, including you, are just lovely and sweet and gorgeous people. He wants to know, what has the film impact on the gay community had so far? And what do you think it's going to be in the future?
Well, I'm getting about 100 emails a day still, and so many of them are from young people who simply had no clue that these events transpired. And I remember when I was young, a long, long time ago, and I would look on television at the movies about World War II or the Depression, you know, things that happened 30 years before I was young. And it seemed like, you know, I mean, it seemed like the Jurassic. It just seems so long ago. Now that I'm old, 30 years ago doesn't seem that long ago. But I think biggest impact is simply to have revealed this history to a new generation that, of course, was not taught this in schools. I mean, we don't generally teach history of any kind in schools, or geography for that matter. We learn about where countries are, perhaps, you know, after we've invaded them. But we don't know. We don't respect history, and we certainly don't teach queer history.
Well, it also makes the politics very appealing, don't you think?
Well, you know, that's a very good point. I hope that... you know, so often I hear people say that they find politics boring, and I just can't fathom that. To me, being part of this movement has been what has sustained me and kept me excited about being alive on the planet. The movement saved my life. I'm so grateful to be part of it, and have always found it truly a thrilling experience. So hopefully some of that will be communicated by this film as well.
Matt wants to know, what other figure in the history of the gay rights movement deserved being the subject of a major motion picture? Who would you like to see next be a movie made out of?
Oh, my goodness, there's so many.
Who would be hot? The Daughters of Bilitis?
Del Martin recently passed away. She and Phyllis Lyon were the first lesbian activists I ever met. I met them in Tempe, Arizona in 1972. I still haven't recovered from that. they're amazing women. I think another wonderful person that would make a great film would be the life of Bayard Rustin, the incredible African-American civil rights activist who was worked closely with Dr. King and was the organizer of Dr. King's March on Washington and was shunted aside as being because he was openly queer. He was also a Quaker, which is something I share with him, and I just think his life would make an extraordinary story. But of course we know that there are a great many figures. And Lance is actually going to be working on a film soon about another very famous homosexual of history.
I wonder who that is.
J. Edgar Hoover,
really?
Ooh, I can't wait to see that one.
I thought you were going to say you.
Clavita is in the works.
Clavita? Is that your drag name?
Clavita. if you're Clavita, who's your Che Guevara?
Oh, that's a secret.
So last but not least, Dolores, before we go to the last question, it's like, I'm really excited about the J. Edgar Hoover movie. This is like, this is news, isn't it?
Panties.
I hope I didn't misspeak. I hope that wasn't a secret.
Well, listen, all the people who are listening, don't blog about it. Don't tell anybody. It's a secret. Okay. Shh. Okay. Last but not least, Dolores, who lives in San Francisco, and all the people in California are wanting to know what an average citizen can do to ensure that Proposition 8 gets repealed, since public opinion doesn't really matter in the judicial system and with the judges. What do you think the campaign people did wrong, and what can we do now in the coming weeks? And you're saying just go to San Francisco or
where? Well, you know, we all know that the our side ran a terrible campaign, and I don't want to, you know, beat that horse anymore. We ran a bad campaign. It wasn't grassroots. We didn't reach out to the communities that we needed to reach out to. That's water under the bridge. What I would say to Dolores is that I don't think the outcome of that court decision is so critical. Win or lose, we are still second-class citizens. So my response to her would be to let's take the energy that we're feeling around this court case right now and build on that, the sustainable, truly nationwide, truly grassroots movement that we have never been able to create before. This is the opportunity to build that truly nationwide movement. And, you know, those most of the people who might be listening to this or watching it on, you know, aren't aware, for example, of the Equal Rights Amendment campaign. The ERA did not become law, but during the years that we were campaigning for the ERA, that was the galvanizing, unifying, rallying cry for supporters of women's rights all across the country. There was an ERA committee in every city, town, every little anywhere in the country you could find people working on the ERA. That's what we need right now, is to unify our movement beyond California, beyond Massachusetts, a campaign that can reach everyone.
Are you looking for an amendment, a gay rights amendment to the Constitution?
We're looking for a comprehensive bill that will ensure equal protection of the law, in all matters governed by civil law in all 50 states, from civil marriage to military service to public accommodation, employment, housing, access to social services, access to education, parental rights, foster parent, adopted rights.
But a bill, not an amendment.
Well, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a legislator. I think that that might it would involve amending some legislation to add the words sexual orientation and gender identity. But again, I'm not a lawyer or a legislator. Okay. But what I know is the bottom line must be full, actual equality.
Cleve, thank you so much for talking to us.
Oh, my pleasure. I love you, boys. I look forward to seeing you again soon.
I love you, too. Listen, our listeners are asking for us to be talking to Dustin Lance Black. Can you help set it up?
Because I've been getting... Have your people call my people. We'll figure it out.
Wonderful.
Bye, sweetie.
Tell Nick, tell that boy who wants James Franco's phone number to send me his photograph.
People
will do it.
Do you want to give out your email on the air? Or do you want me to give it to him specifically?
We'll forward it on to you.
He's really cute.
I love hearing from people. My website is clevejones.com. I love hearing from people.
Okay. So send cock shots
when they're
too.
Attractive.
So if you're attractive and you have a hard dick, send it to clevejones.com. And I appreciate it. You know, any photos that we get, Cleve, we'll forward to you
yes.
too.
Mail cock shots to mail at feastoffools.net.
Cleve,
take care.
Love you.
Bye, Cleve. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Cleve Jones lives in beautiful Palm Springs, California. You can learn more about the future of the gay rights movement and what you can do to participate through our website, feastoffools.net, or through Cleve Jones' website, clevejones.com. We also recommend that people join the Impact.
Mm-hmm. You can do that. Jointheimpact.com and also their Facebook group.
Yeah, so join their Facebook group. Join the Feast of Fools Facebook group. We usually let people know what's going on to stay wired and connected, people.
And our fan page. You have a fan page, too.
Everybody has a fan page.
I have a fan page, too.
Because if I don't really know you...
You have more fans than I have. You have 16. I have 9.
Ooh, we're internationally famous.
I know.
So what's happening in the news, Mark?
What's happening in the news? The BBC News just released a report on the world's most unfortunate names. Well, some of the people... Get some of these names. I don't know why people name their kids these awful names.
So world's most unfortunate name.
Yeah, some of them are Pearl Button, Joe King, Barry Cade, Carrie Oakey.
Wait, you're going too fast. I have to soak it in.
Okay.
So Joe King. As in joking around.
Yes. So I'll say the name and you say what it says.
Okay.
Okay, so Pearl Button.
That sounds like a pearl necklace.
Okay. Joe King.
Yeah.
Barry Cade.
Okay, that's like a barricade behind a fence.
Carrie Oakey.
Oh, my God.
Pretty Manic. Okay. Tim Burr.
So is someone's last name Manic?
Yeah, somebody's last name is Manic.
That's your name.
I think there used to be a TV show called Manic or something like that.
Manic.
Yeah, it was. But and
handle
then they have
care.
Listed from, they have some American names that are more job specific. So there's actually a Dr. Leslie Doctor and then a Dr. Thulton Surgeon and the dentist one. Guess what the dentist one is?
I think if I had a last name Ann, it should be Leslie B. Ann.
Yeah. Leslie B. Ann. Less Beans.
Less Beans or Less B.
That's what I did. Remember when American Express had that thing where you could get Ellen? It had Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, and you tried to get a credit card under Ellen DeGeneres' name?
Well, no. She had this thing where you could get her cartoon say things.
Oh,
you know?
American Express had a viral campaign where they got a website where Ellen DeGeneres could be made to say things.
Yes. So it was in her voice and stuff like that. And so I tried to get her to say like dirty things, but it wouldn't go through. And so then I went back and I had her say something about having less beans. So I had her say lesbians or
less
something
beans.
Like that.
Less beans. Less B-N.
But guess what the dentist one's name? I think this is very clever.
Okay.
Less plaque.
Is that the dentist's baby?
Now, I always thought because if I have a child, because my last name's Fillion, that I would actually name it Necra.
Oh, that is just... You know, my sister, Talia, her first name was Jenna.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're Jenna? What? I don't get it.
Talia's her middle name.
Okay.
Her first name is Jenna.
Jenna Farinos?
No, her
Genitalia.
First name is Jenna. Yeah, there you go.
Genitalia.
Woo! It's crazy around
it's
here.
It's crazy.
In China, there's a new office building just recently built with 1,000 windows. It has the it now has the world's record of the building with the most number of windows for its size in the world in ratio. It would since it's an office building, it would really suck if you worked there and you didn't have a office with a window. And inevitably, I'm sure somebody does it.
I don't have a window. Well, there's somebody with a cubicle or something like that. That's a lot of weird windows. I can't imagine it has the most windows.
Actually.
Yeah, it's kind of fun looking, but it's just it's very comical. I don't really think it has the most windows of a building, does it?
That's what they're claiming, and that's what the Guinness Book of World Records is saying.
Well, because some of them are
go over to where they make the beer in England and start arguing with them.
It's in the UK.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so where is UK, England is part of the UK.
It's in Ireland. It's in Dublin.
It's in Ireland. Okay.
Yeah, that's where they make
Guinness. So go fly up to, because actually, why do they do the Guinness Book of World Records is to settle barroom arguments?
Yes.
And now you just have podcasts and Wikipedia do it for you.
Just go to Wikipedia. Or I think Guinness probably has a website for that. Or they actually probably still produce a book. I don't know. It's like a coffee table book or something like that.
I know. With lots of crazy pictures. One day I want to be the guy who eats the most hard-boiled eggs. And I hate hard-boiled eggs.
Ooh, I can imagine.
I had a dream. I was trying to eat hard-boiled eggs and I couldn't do it.
I'll make you some.
I hate hard-boiled eggs.
Really? I love hard-boiled eggs.
But I think it's, you know, it would be hard to keep this building warm. Because it
it's double glazed windows.
Around there.
It could be double glazed windows. I don't know.
It looks like Swiss cheese.
So there's an interesting news article that comes out of the UK, but it's about Florida, and they call them crocodiles. Just so people know that we don't have crocodiles like in the United States. They're alligators, right?
What's the difference between a crocodile and an alligator?
They're like different species or
about
something.
About 100 pounds.
They're different species.
I think crocodiles are big, giant alligators. Mm-hmm. Best way to remember that. The crocs are big.
I think alligators are bigger. Aren't alligators bigger than crocodiles?
No, alligators are the tinier ones. But they both will mess you up.
Both mess you up. But the thing is like, we'll get more onto fossils later and stuff like that. But there used to be hundreds and thousands of varieties of alligators and stuff like that. And they were actually the predominant species on the planet at one point in time. But then
the earth used to be covered with alligators and nothing but alligators.
Alligators and other types of animals like that. But
really?
A big comet hit and most of them were destroyed. So luckily we still have alligators and crocodiles and what are the little tiny ones?
Pet shop alligators.
Yeah, the pet shop alligators. The one named Cayman Island.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The Cayman Island alligators that are really tiny. But what they're trying to do, because they often, alligators are very territorial and they'll invade people's homes and the rescue workers will come and take them away and bring them to a swamp, but they're very territorial, and so they come back. And so what they've discovered in Mexico they actually do have crocodiles, and so what they do in Mexico is they attach magnets to its head so it will confuse them and disorient them.
Really?
And so they won't know where to go. Now eventually the magnets fall off, and they're hoping that wherever they take these crocodiles or alligators that they'll just remain there and not try and return to their home.
Magnets.
Yeah, because
scramble
they have
the
like
brains.
They
got metal in their head.
They have metal in their head, and they figure the North Pole and that kind of stuff.
You don't know what you're talking about.
No, it does. It orients them. And same with migration patterns with birds and stuff like that. And they actually, humans have a buildup of metal in their nose. So sometimes you can just tell where north is just by
sniffing it out.
Yeah, you sniff it out.
I always thought it was interesting how you managed to get home drunk after being in bars at night.
The metal in my head.
The history of sex, the biological origin of sex
came much sooner than they thought. So they found fossils of a pregnant fish from about 365 million years ago, and they thought that reproduction, you know, where animals actually had sex to reproduce, happened much later. And so this is kind of
360 million years ago. On approximately,
yes.
Sex was developed in evolutionary speaking.
Yes, so fish were the first people to fuck.
That was going to really mess up with a lot of gay men's heads.
Why?
Think about that.
But what came first? Was it, you know, gay sex might have come before actual, like, sex?
Oh, so like rubbing their bodies together.
Because it used to be.
Was for pleasure, and then it became for biological genetic exchange.
Because it used to be the fish would go and she'd lay her eggs, and then the guys would come over and like and
fertilize
them. So, I mean, that could have been like other guys rubbing up against each other. And
that's true.
You know? So it might be, gay might be a lot older than you think.
Well, this is the question that people are always like saying gay is not natural, but mm-hmm. I always say it's like, you don't know anything about biology because all mammals practice mm-hmm. gay sex. And anybody who's ever owned a dog, seen his dog humping just about anything it can, you know, it's like,
it's true.
It's observed that dolphins and flamingos and birds all, you know, especially those bluebirds. They're the queerest of them all.
Bluebirds are gay?
Flamingos actually are the gayest birds there
are. I thought
are.
Penguins are.
You know what the flamingos like to do?
What?
Lesbian flamingos like to diddle each other with their beaks.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
I love it.
And dolphins, they stick their penises inside their blowholes. That's just a rumor.
They don't call it a blowhole for nothing.
An Austrian lawmaker on Tuesday has put forward this advice mm-hmm. suggesting that couples that are considering getting married not do it because it leads to more wasteful lifestyles.
You said people getting divorced.
Yes. Considering getting a divorce not to do it because getting a divorce will lead to more wasteful lifestyles. Senator Steve Fielding, an Australian lawmaker, told the Senate hearing that divorce made climate change worse. Mm. I think, you know, if you really
want to...
you
need two homes instead of one, right?
That's true, but also when people get separated, I guess he did a study or whatever, but he figured out...
He just made things up.
He may pull shit out of his ass, but he says that single people who have just gone through a divorce lead a resource inefficient lifestyle.
They don't recycle.
They're just kind of, all they're doing is basically buying new clothes, going to nightclubs, having a lot of sex, and then throwing away the plastic.
Sounds good.
Well, it's not eco-friendly. If you really want to be eco-friendly and encourage people mm-hmm. to live a green lifestyle, why not legalize gay marriage mm-hmm. everywhere?
Or polyamorous people so that like you could have group marriages and people just...
And they live together.
Living together in giant houses.
Think about just this.
Like nunneries.
All the beds that would be saved because mm-hmm. usually... Although you and I are technically married, but we sleep in separate beds.
Well, we're not technically married. We're married in the heart.
Married in the heart, which means that we live together. and in that way, it's kind of mm-hmm. green. You know? And we share.
And we work out of our home, so we lead a pretty green life. So I got to turn that light off over there.
Yes. Save electricity. While we're taping a show, we're like, look at all the... In fact, why don't we just end the show and that will make it green? That will really make it green.
I want to remind people
Before I go, last but not least, Simon Cowell, the mm-hmm. American Idol judge and producer, wants to clarify... All rumors about him wanting to be frozen after his death have been greatly exaggerated. From now on, he'll just enjoy being icy in life, not in death. Thank you very much.
Hey, I want to remind people that this Friday at 8 o'clock, we have our live podcast at Steamworks. It's going to be a lot of fun. So come out and see Bill Cruz, Adam Guarino, Tracy Tyler, and Keith Ecker and the musical stylings of Phil Putnam.
And we're going to bring a cake. And we're just somebody will be sitting on a cake.
Who it will be? I don't know.
Will it be you? Will it be me?
It could be somebody from the audience. It could be
anything can happen.
Anything is possible. And some people I've heard are actually doing their performance in towels. And you do not have to wear a towel to watch the show. You do not have to have sex with anybody.
It's basically, think of it as a theater. Yeah. You know, you don't go with it. Well, okay, let me clarify. Think of it as a theater where you don't have sex with other people. Where you keep your clothes on. That's probably not a good metaphor. Think of it as if you're watching TV at home, but you're doing it out in public.
Just come and have fun.
Yeah, right. So we'll see you there. See I'm Fausto Fernandes.
I'm Mark Billion.
And this is the music of Jeffrey Straker from his album Step Right Up, the song Hypnotize. You know what? Hold on a second. I want to play something different.
What are you going to play?
He has the cutest little song called Emoticons, and it's really short.
Emoticons.
And so I'm going to leave you guys with that one because it's really adorable. And it's about cruising for sex on the internet.
It is?
It is.
Hot.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. I see your smile. You're giving me those chat-room eyes. Your emoticons are making love to me. You're
typing fast, a grammar queen. You're steaming up my computer screen. Do you wanna take this over to MSN? I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love. It's an online love affair. I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love. And maybe I don't even care that I never, ever, ever really met you. That I never, ever, ever